Chip and Pin has now been in the UK for just over 5 years, and it has had quite a lot of impact, although not always the impact that was hoped or first envisaged. And in this talk, I'm going to discuss how things have worked and what things have failed to work. I'll use the term EMV quite a lot, and this is the name of the system that is behind Chip and Pin. It stands for the original designers, Europay, which got eaten by MasterCard, MasterCard themselves and Visa, who were the original team which designed it, although more members have since joined there. And this is by far the dominant smart card system for payments. It's now deployed in pretty much every country. The only notable exception is the US, which don't currently use EMV. They just use magnetic stripe cards. But there's a lot of pressure from the merchants to try to introduce this because currently they are paying very high fraud costs compared to other countries. It's suitable for both point of sale and ATM transactions. I will be mainly talking about point of sale, but the same underlying technology is used in the UK. Other countries are different. For example, Germany use the magstripe for many ATM transactions, whereas the chip for many point of sale transactions. And it works for both credit and debit. From the perspective of the system itself, it doesn't really know much about whether it's a credit or debit card. It works basically the same, and it's really how it gets billed that differentiates the two different systems. And this is extremely widely deployed. The last set of figures are 750 million cards. It's now over a billion cards are deployed using EMV, even though it's had comparatively little scrutiny from the academic community. But because we've been looking at it, we hear a lot of information from ordinary members of the public. And what they say is that quite often, when they're the victim of fraud, they talk to their bank, and the bank will say that because this is a chip and PIN transaction, they're not going to be refunded for their losses, because the banks claim that EMV is infallible, so they end up not getting their money back. The common response is, you can't clone a chip card, therefore it was your card, it was your PIN, and so it's your fault that you've lost the money. And the British Crime Survey last year found that 44% of fraud victims don't get all of their money back. So it's a significant problem. To look at how Chip and PIN has had an effect on fraud, we can look at the total fraud figures. And the UK is fairly good in this regard because they actually published them. That's not the case for all countries. And the particular period we're interested in is the time in which Chip and PIN was being rolled out. So it started around about 2002, 2003, and then by 2005, it was fully rolled out and it was mandatory for all the UK banks. And we can see some interesting things in terms of fraud. The categories of fraud that we're quite interested in are these ones. So there's counterfeit cards, someone taking a card, somehow cloning it or getting the details, making a fake card and then using it. Lost and stolen card, where the wrong person uses a legitimate card. And mail non-receipt, which is where the card that is sent to you from the bank never gets there, but it's intercepted along the way. And Chip and PIN was designed to try to reduce all of these. It had the chip to make it harder to copy cards, and it had the PIN to make sure that if you store a card or you intercepted one in the mail, you wouldn't be able to use it. And if we look at the figures to see how successful this is, it's a bit of a mixed batch. Counterfeit fraud went down initially, so the chip did make things a bit harder, but then it started going up again. So that didn't work out too well. On the other hand, the PIN aspect of Chip and PIN seems to work reasonably well. Lost and stolen went down fairly gradually, and mail non-receipt went down fairly dramatically. But the big difference is that by the time Chip and PIN was in the middle of its deployment, none of these things were the serious problem. It was card-not-present transactions. So these are transactions like internet, mainly internet, also phone, where the card is not physically present. There's no PIN being used, there's no chip being used, and so the criminals who were having problems with these categories of fraud simply moved up there, and the levels of fraud rocketed. And we can also look at why fraud didn't reduce that much for counterfeit cards. One reason is that the chip and PIN terminals were not particularly well designed. They process your PIN because you type it in and they have your card, so they have access to all the details that are being read off the chip and your PIN, and they're supposed to protect these. But we found out that if you drill a hole in the back of these and then put in a paper clip, then you can hook on to the single communication line which is being used for sending the PIN and your card details in an unencrypted form. Once you've got these, you can then simply record them onto one of these blank cards. We've done this with just a store loyalty card, and then use it as a counterfeit card. But card not present went up even more dramatically, and one of the reasons for that is phishing. Now, I'm sure many of you have seen something a bit like this, where you're asked to go to a website and give various details, date of birth, social security number, this is targeted at Americans, and then your PIN and your card's CVV, and basically everything that they could think of. And that would then be used for committing fraud. But what we found out this year, the latest set of figures, is that card not present dropped for the first time since records began. And one of the reasons for this is that the Verify by Visa system and MasterCard secure code were introduced. The way these work is that when you are going through the final stage of an online transaction, then it will ask you for some details off your card and your name, your email address and password. It really depends a lot on the bank. And then this data then gets sent back to the bank which issued you the card and verified. So it means if you've just got someone's card number and expiry date, then that's not quite enough to commit fraud. And not only did counterfeit fraud, card not present fraud reduce, but also counterfeit fraud reduced. I mentioned that criminals are found ways of tapping the details from a chip and PIN terminal and then writing that to a magstripe card. That worked because it's still possible, or was still possible, to use magstripe cards in most countries, because although the chip and PIN system was introduced, they didn't turn off the old system because you might have people going abroad which don't have chip and PIN readers. You might have people from the US coming here and they don't have chip and PIN cards. So the magstripe system wasn't really turned off. But it's been gradually transitioned to being disabled, especially for cards that are supposed to have a chip. And I think that's one of the reasons why we can see this fraud drop. Perhaps not the only reason, and I'll talk about that next. So if we now go over to 2009, we can see that the two major categories have dropped quite significantly. There were some minor increases in other areas, but overall the picture looks quite good. But there's one big problem with these statistics and this data as a whole, which is that it only records losses to the shops and to the banks. It doesn't include that 44% of customers who don't get their money back. And as far as I can tell, none of the banks are even recording that data, let alone making it publicly available. So another reason that we might think that there's a problem there is if we look at the terms and conditions that have been introduced when these systems were deployed. So if we look at when Verify by Visa and MasterCard Secure Code were introduced, when you are registering for it and choosing your password, you're also agreeing to terms and conditions. And one of them was that you understand that you're financially responsible for all uses of RBS Secure. So this is Royal Bank of Scotland. Other banks have basically the same terms. And what this is saying is that if anyone gets your password, then suddenly that's no longer the bank's problem, but that's your problem. And so this drop of card not present fraud might be some down to criminals going elsewhere, and also it might be that it's just no longer being counted. And we see a very similar situation for counterfeit fraud. many people come to us and say that they've lost their money and the bank's not refunding them. And a fairly typical response is here. This is from Amex, where the bank is saying that chip and PIN charges cannot be disputed, as a card would have had to be in possession when the charges are put through. So this is definitely fraud, but it's no longer a fraud that falls on the bank or on the merchant, it's on the customer, and so that never appears in those sorts of statistics. Another section that's quite interesting is online banking fraud. This is fairly small, but out of the 2009 figures, this is the only one which went up. So I think criminals are starting to move over to this area, and there are certainly plenty of weaknesses in the online banking systems that are used in the UK. They're far, far behind ones used in, for example, Germany. And I think this is where a lot of the growth in fraud is going to be.
And now Stephen's going to show us a video.